This is Bea Arthur, and you're listening to the Be the Change podcast, sponsored by Sonos. Everybody, welcome back to Be the Change. We took a brief hiatus. I was gone for a minute, but now I'm back with the jump off. And as you know, my name is Bea, and I want to change your life. I am so excited for this episode because a feedback that I get a lot is that even though I'm a feminist, a therapist, and a journalist, but always first a feminist, is that I hate men. But everybody who know me, I love men as friends, lovers, partners. I love their slim hips. I love how dumb they are. And, you know, I just feel like these days men are really struggling, you know, in the patriarchy, especially men with high IQ. You see a lot that they have low EQ. So, and I know a lot of good dudes that I've had in practice and my friendships and that I've been in relationships with that are good men at their core, but maybe because of society, patriarchy, hanging out with the wrong crowd, they have fuckboy tendencies. So I'm not sure how many times I can say this, but this episode is called Fuckboys Anonymous. And joining me to help us understand all this stuff is expert coach Dominic Quartuccio.
What's up, B? I'm actually quite thrilled to know that you dig my thin hips.
I do.
Yeah, that's a compliment I've never received in my life before. I don't know if that was directed towards me or men in general, making that personal.
That's good. That's how you develop confidence. Well, I was so impressed with you. We actually met at Esther Perel's conference for therapists and coaches and leaders last year about the paradox of masculinity.
Yeah.
It was a really fascinating topic. A lot of great experts about the difference between men and women, how it conditions us, how it affects our psyches. I know all about you. I love you. Tell us about yourself.
Cool. So I'll start with where I am right now. Right now, I'm an executive coach. I'm an international speaker and author. I typically work with high-performing men and women who have achieved a lot of success. They're publicly decorated, but privately confused. So they're starting to ask these bigger questions around, I have everything, but I'm feeling trapped in the life I've created. I'm feeling bored or restless in the life they've created. I don't know why. And the reason why I work with those people is because I was one of those people. I spent 15 years in financial services working for a Fortune 100 company, Prudential Financial. Ran a sales team, $1.4 billion sales goal, corner office in New York City, a lot of responsibility. Business treated me really well. And on the surface, everything was going well. But behind the scenes, I had this private life that no one knew about it because I tucked it away quite nicely. And it was something that developed over the course of 30 plus years of my life. And what it culminated in, this private part of my life, was hitting a bottom and ending up in Sex Addicts Anonymous from the years 2013 to 2017. And the reason why I ended up there was because when I was 35 years old, I finally fell in love with for the first time in my life. I didn't know I was capable of it. Mm-hmm. And this one woman penetrated the walls and the barriers I'd put up, and I fell in love with her. And yet at the same time, even though my love was growing for her, I couldn't stop sexting other women. Mm-hmm. I couldn't stop seeking validation because over a course of 20 plus years of my life, this private side of me that learned how to deal with emotions through pornography, through sexting, through masturbation, that became my cure-all for anything emotionally related. Mm. And so even when I was in a relationship with someone I deeply cared about, all of those same stressors, the overwhelm, the boredom, the restlessness, mm-hmm. The only tools I had in my arrows in my quiver were those things. And so I found myself like breaking promises. And one day she caught me. We were on a vacation together. It was December 28th, 2012 in Colorado at the St. Julian Hotel in Boulder, Colorado. And she found my phone, opened it, and saw a string of text messages that broke her heart. And and in that moment, to save the relationship, I said, I think I have a problem. And on some level, I did think I had a problem, but it was mainly a Hail Mary at the time to save the relationship. Mm. I'm like, I think I'll go to Sex Addicts Anonymous. I'll get therapy. So on January 6, 2013, I went to my first 12-step meeting. I stepped into therapy, group therapy. And it was only after like 4 or 5 months of actually doing the work that I realized this isn't just about the relationship. It's actually, I got my own shit that I have to fix.
Yeah.
And that changed my life forever.
Wow.
Well, yeah, don't applaud me yet, right? We got there's
so
a lot
you're
more
cured.
Work to be done.
No, yeah. Obviously. Well, that's the whole point. It's a journey. It takes a long time, 35 years to learn those coping mechanisms, and it takes even longer to unlearn them in some cases. But you're doing active work. So what have you seen with clients with similar situations?
Yeah, well, maybe first it'd be helpful to share with what I witnessed when I went into the 12-step meetings, right? Because it was full of men who were also there with similar problems. I know we're talking about fuckboys, and you know, I had a chance to see a lot of men who had hit bottom, you know, like guys who on one end of the spectrum, maybe were just watching way too much porn and they just couldn't stop. They were watching it all day long, maybe at work, and they're like, yo, I got a problem. Yeah. But then there were other people who had drained their entire bank accounts on escorts and maybe had multiple addictions as well. And other men had gone even further than that into some pretty scary places. And so there was a lot of different men in the room. And what was really interesting for me to see, B, was that these men, including myself, had caused real destruction in our lives, real destruction. Like, you know, the woman that I broke her heart and we had, and her trust, and there was a lot of repairing that had to be done. And many of these men had that and more. And we all needed to pay the price, right? Mm-hmm. We all needed to pay the price
there
for our actions.
Bottom.
And people were incensed at us and we needed to take that. But we also needed, if we were going to actually recover and heal ourselves and become better men, we also needed a place to go where there was compassion and there was support and there was a curiosity and understanding. Because there were men in those rooms who you've seen on national television who've been disgraced. Like I'm talking about politicians and movie stars that you know of were in these rooms in New York City and they deserve to be disgraced on the public scene, but they also deserve to have a place for them to get better so we could come back and actually be contributing members and repair and heal. And so I spent, for myself personally, I spent 4 years in Sex Addicts Anonymous from 2013 to 2017 working on my shit. And it changed my life. I felt like I had rebirthed as a result of that. Like my girlfriend at the time catching me in that moment, I look at that as being like my rebirth moment. And I go back to Boulder, Colorado every single year.
Really?
Yes, out of homage to that, because it feels like this is where I found myself.
Wow, that was your inflection point.
Yeah, a big one, yeah.
That's amazing. Are you all still together?
We're not. We stayed together for about 8 months after that, trying to work through it. And then I ended up being the one who left that relationship.
Wow.
Yeah.
You felt like she deserved better, or you weren't ready, or you just still wanted to work on yourself?
Once I had a chance to see much more clearly, like me, her, us together, I realized that it wasn't the right, like we were not the right people for each other. We were the right people to come into each other's lives for a very specific reason.
And a season.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that mission was accomplished.
Oh, yeah. And so there's always deep love and respect. There's bonds, right? We have soul contracts with people that are meant to teach us things. And I really like that. And so again, I love that point. Yes, they deserve to be disgraced. They deserve to be called out. They deserve to lose everything if that's the damage that they've done. However, as a therapist, I always understand. I'll always make room. You know, like it has to be a safe place. And I think more importantly, it's just that like you have to build from empathy and understanding. Because and so I don't want it to be definitive when I say fuckboy tendencies or fuckboy behaviors. Because again, core is good man, but like the tendencies or the behaviors are self-destructive coping mechanisms.
Right.
You believe on some level you deserve to be shamed. You know, it's a self-flagellation that if nobody's calling you on it, you have to kick it up a notch.
Yeah.
It has to get more and more intense, more extreme, more risky.
Yes.
In order for it to have the payoff of the relief that you're seeking.
And it happens like incrementally over a long period of time. It just like one notch. And you do this over years. And like you look back 5 years ago, and this tame behavior, maybe if we're talking about fuckboys, right? It could be, oh, maybe you're sleeping with one girl a week and that's one different woman a week. Mm-hmm. Like that could be 50 plus women in a year. But then 5 years later of doing that and you're on every single dating app, now you're up to 5 women a week. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just to get the same high as you did 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now you're spiraling, but you can rationalize it bit by bit all along the way.
Especially highly intelligent people. They can rationalize anything.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why it's so tricky, because it's not just that, like, the behavior, right? It, like, the original, like, reason for it, like, the root cause of what's causing you. And it's not always just sex addiction, right? Sometimes it's love addiction, attention addiction. You know, there are guys who are just like, for the most part, happy with their partners. But what they're seeking outside of it, what the missing, they feel like they're missing out on something else. That is, like, what's unresolved. That's where the conflict is, you know? And, like, we're always going to feel bad when we're out of alignment with what serves us.
I love that point that you're making. And it reminds me of something that was fascinating to me when I was in the 12-step meetings for Sex Addicts Anonymous. I found out that there were a lot of men who were in there who frequented massage parlors. Mm-hmm. And I've never, like, that was never part of, like, my template or anything. So I was kind of fascinated. I'm like, what is it that caused these men to go so often? And I found out that there were two reasons why men ended up going there. Number one, they never experienced any healthy touch as a child. Mm. And they were looking for some form of loving touch. And it got kind of mutated and they went and wanted to get a massage and then it turned sexual for them.
Wow.
Or they were inappropriately touched. They were sexually touched and it was like mixed up with love and authority figures and whatever. And so they didn't necessarily know how to discern between healthy, loving touch and sexual touch. And so those were the two men who oftentimes went there because they were looking for maybe something that was along the lines of intimacy.
Yes.
And I think back to, like, my parents were extremely loving. They were very emotive. They always said we loved and they always hugged. But I was always very clear what a loving touch was
right.
and what a sexual touch was.
Right.
So you're right. There's all of these little things that over time they can manifest themselves into these weird, wonky behaviors that we're not even aware of.
Exactly. We talked about this at Esther Perel's thing. There's a lot of dudes out here that are getting pussy, but they're not getting peace, you know, because they're getting that connectivity. They're getting it wet, but there's the missing the intimacy and they don't know how. And so that's why the different manifestations might be sex related, but it's like these are needs. I always say, like, obviously I love men, but black men especially are my heroes. Black Lives Matter. And I always say one of the worst things that happened to the black masculine identity was the term no homo.
Oh, right.
Because you can't even, like, put your arm around a dude. You can't even, like, people be brothers posted up. They're like, that's gay, Nick. Da, 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 da. Like, and we need touch to survive. Like, you're hardwired for it. And so if we learn all these, then we end up having these dysfunctional adjustments, like going to the massage parlor, like always being on Tinder, even though you're married. Just, there's all these ways of calling out, and these are a little cries for help.
Let's talk about that for a second. So I'm 40 years old. I grew up in the that's gay generation.
Oh yeah, the right? 90s was an era of time.
That was yeah, like it was if anything that was somewhat effeminate, like, oh, that's gay. Oh, yep. Don't be gay.
Eminem, like can you imagine? He just, like, blatantly defended his word to use the name faggot back then. It was just like, I don't mean it like that. It's just gay.
Right. Like Eddie Murphy Raw. I mean, like,
it just
half
meant
the words
liking
out of his
something
mouth.
Too much.
What's that?
It just meant liking something too much.
Yeah, right. But, like,
being expressive about, excited about something natural. Isn't that sad?
And then that's gay. And so I grew up with that, and I didn't even, and so it, like, in my mind, it was never malicious,
right?
And it wasn't malicious, but it was also quite divisive. It also created a lot of barriers. Now, over the last year and a half, I've been part of a men's group. Every Monday night, I get together with seven other guys in Brooklyn, and we do inner work. And, like, what we're working on is not solving each other's problems. Dude's got a lot of, we have plenty of guys who can give us advice, right? Plenty of guys who want to fix it stuff. Mm-hmm. Our practice on Monday nights is actually, like, to feel our feelings, to feeling our emotions. And when I first was, when my friends approached me to be a part of this group, I was like, that sounds stupid. Like, that sounds terrible. Why would I want to be a part of a men's group feeling through emotions? And what I found, I didn't want to miss out because there was a couple of really cool guys as part of the group. So I became part of it. And what I learned was I had a hard time, like, tapping into and actually feeling what I was feeling. One of the biggest feelings I was burying was anger. And I would have told you I was never an angry guy, but I was able to, like, channel that when I was in those meetings. And the reason why I bring up that story is in those men's group meetings, we're oftentimes at the end of it, like, hugging or putting our arms around someone who's had, like, a really deep and emotional breakthrough. And I remember at first, for me, it brought up a lot of weird feelings. I'm like, two men hugging and crying. I'm like, this is weak. I don't want to be a part of this, or it's, I'm uncomfortable, even though I know that it's not. I just started to recognize how much conditioning was inside of me that resisted this stuff.
Yes.
And I think a lot of men have that and don't recognize it either. And it causes distance between us and other guys.
Well, I want to bring in some very gay bro connection right now.
Let's get it up.
The rainbow forever. We are going to queue it up for our male caller today. And as always, just do a quick disclaimer. I am a therapist, but this is just an advice show. So the following segment is not therapy, but we are very happy to have our guest. And I always say to know a person's true self, you have to know their fake Insta.
Yeah, I love that.
So our caller will not be revealing their true identity or any identifying details. So caller, go ahead and mute yourself and tell us your Finsta.
Hi, well, thank you for having me on. My name is Stephen Woods. I live in New York City. I'm a technology entrepreneur. I've been very successful with it. But I'd love to get your thoughts on something I'm struggling with, which is kind of when to, you know, make a commitment. I'm struggling with this notion of every time I meet a woman and I'm like, well, this part's not good enough or that part's not good enough. And I just keep cycling through people that are probably wonderful with kind of searching for this idealized notion. And I sit here afraid that because I constantly am looking for perfection, I'm going to end up alone, right? Kind of the sacrificing the good for the great.
Classic Seinfeld syndrome.
Yeah, I can relate, my friend.
Welcome to the show, Stefan. We are happy to help. My name's Be I Wanna Change Your Life, Dominic. Tee us up.
Okay, so do you mind if I ask a few questions, Stephanie?
Please, that's the point.
Yeah?
Please.
Okay.
Sure.
I'm curious, when you think about a commitment, right, like being with someone for a longer period of time or maybe for a lifetime, emotionally, what does that kick up inside of you?
When I think about being with somebody for a long period of time, it brings up comfort and kind of, you know, like a nice warm hug. That's what's coming to mind right now.
I'm going to keep going on this thread. Is there any part of you that feels an attack on your freedom of some kind when you think about having a long-term relationship?
Well, there's certainly something that I'm conscious of, and that's that I've become institutionalized as a single person. Right, I'm used to not thinking about somebody else, not thinking about somebody else's schedule or feelings or thoughts, not having anybody in my space. Right, I'm used to that. But whenever I do begin a relationship, you know, I'll always have the struggle of, you know, they want to sleep over. I'm like, let's not do that.
But Super's here. He's so nice.
The first few sleeping overs are really difficult for me, and you know, I'm fortunate enough to have another bedroom, and so I will almost always go into that other bedroom.
So it's sleep. Is it sleep related? Is your sleep disrupted?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sleep is always disruptive to someone else in the bed.
Got it.
But eventually, eventually I get used to it and I'm okay with it. I can sleep. But in the beginning of almost every relationship I've ever had, the sleep is a challenge, and certainly, you know, when they go away on vacation, I'm not sitting there going, oh, gosh, when do they get back? I'm like, thank fucking God. Like, like sprawl out on the bed.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's like the independent. Well, my guess, but I'm going to let you're the master at this, maybe related to independence, but there's also if you can't sleep. And also, Stefan, thank you so much for being honest, because, yeah, if I slept over and I woke up, I'd be like, yeah, that's fuckboy behavior. But we're going to get to the bottom of it. So what's your guess at the situation?
All right. So if I were to keep asking questions, like here's where my gut instinct is, Stefan. I think that there's an ambivalence on some level of, I definitely want this comfort, this warm hug, this building a future with someone. And then I also feel that there's probably a big blind spot for you around all of the areas of your life that feel threatened by the idea of having that same kind of relationship. So like we just hit on one thing, which is my disruptive sleep. But then it could be like going to eat where I want to eat, when I want to eat. It could be like the shows that I want to watch. It could be the vacationing where I want a vacation, or it could be the emotional stuff that gets brought up inside of a relationship that can come at the most inconvenient of times. This all could be triggered by previous relationships or maybe what you witnessed with like your parents. And these are all just like, these are just gut instincts based on what you had shared with me so far. So I'll pause to see if anything is kicking up for you. That sounds true.
Yeah, look, that certainly all resonates on some level. I think the struggle Well, that is certainly, you know, the sleep and kind of, you know, I was responding to your questions about, you know, individualism. You know, when I think about this struggle of saying, hey, this is the person I want to kind of focus in on, I think about the difference between someone that is very accomplished and can bring assets and intellectual curiosity and things to the relationship versus somebody that is very nurturing and kind. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those things are right. mutually exclusive. Hmm. And when I'm with someone nurturing and kind, it's a wonderful relationship. And then I say to when the relationship ends and friends say, what happened? Why? I was like, she never shit together. Mm-hmm. You know, she didn't really know what she was doing. She doesn't, you know, want anything out of life. She's not pushing me. I'm not pushing, you know, I try to push her and she doesn't respond. And then when I'm with somebody that brings incremental wealth and power to the relationship, I'm like, yeah, they are not nurturing. Mm. They are just, you know, go, 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 and it's too much. And it's, I've always kind of shift between those two poles. Mm.
And in what's coming present for me, Stefan, is like this belief system that's probably propping up around it that I can't have both. It has to be one mm-hmm. or the other. And what you're reminding me of is an experience I had inside of a large men's group, a lot of very successful entrepreneurs. And he was also a tech entrepreneur. This guy's quite successful. He was in a relationship with the sweetest woman in the world, had a chance to meet her. And then, but he was also uninspired by her mm-hmm. life, you know, 'cause he's a very ambitious guy. She wasn't. And she didn't have the intellect that you were speaking of. And I remember him saying something like, I just want a woman who's competent, you know, competent at something. And I'm like, dude, you want your fucking accountant to be competent. I'm like, but you want something inspiring. And I think what's often strange, what I find with guys is that we tend to set our sights on relationships with women with like somewhat low expectations, like meaning, oh, she should, I hear a lot of guys say this. She's just easygoing and that's good enough for me. Mm. You know what I mean? She's not bothering me. She's right. not annoying me. And like, it was comfortable. And I remember, Stefan, being at a point in time in my life too, where I felt like, oh, I have to have either this one or the other. And once I started believing that actually I could have it all, like I could have a beautiful woman who is deep in her heart, who is lit up by her life, passionate about something, who's outspoken, who could drive me further. Then I just like, I naturally started attracting more of those women. But the first part of it had to be that belief that it existed. And I'm just curious for you, is there some part of you that believes that that's not possible?
Mm. Well, maybe there's a belief. I would challenge the belief with data that, you know, I've dated thousands of women and I haven't found that combination.
Brother, thousands?
You a dog, Stefan.
Are you Wilt Chamberlain? With
this is Stefan Urkel.
I mean, I haven't slept with thousands. I've gone out on dates.
Interesting.
And your experience, the data that you've had, has led you to believe that
there's only two kind of women?
Well, people, I would say. I think that people that are accumulating power and doing things tend to have a much harder edge, right? They're type mm-hmm. A people.
Okay, sure. Mm-hmm.
And so, look, obviously the traits exist in both people. I think part of the incremental challenge is I spent so much time in my 20s and 30s not thinking about a relationship. Mm. And another complicating factor is, you know, as you sit here in your 40s, your pool of eligibles is just smaller. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, dealing with characteristics that are not mutually exclusive but don't necessarily go together in a much, much smaller pool of women, because I really am not looking to date women much younger mm-hmm. Than I am, is just an incremental challenge.
Man, like, what I'm hearing is you have no shortage of data to prove your belief system correct right now, but it's also the thing that's limiting you from getting what you want. So the thousands of dates that you've been on, the shrinking pool that you're talking about of women that's available, the successful women have a harder edge to them, or successful people in general have a harder edge. These are all beliefs that you've developed as a result of your life experience to date. But it's also what you're carrying forward into the future as this is how it's going to be. This is the landscape. And if that is your landscape, then you're going to find more of the same. And just think about someone who's never known anything but poverty in their life, or never known anything but bad luck all their life, who've been beaten down all their life. There's always the opportunity for that person to go out and turn the corner, to be successful, to catch that break, if they believe that that's possible. There are plenty of people who pulled themselves out of those situations. And for you, man, I'm firmly in belief that the first place for you to start is to actually to plant the seed of belief that it could be very different from the way that it's been for you up to this point. But until you start to change internally, the world around you is going to look the same as it always has.
Yeah, I actually think exactly. It's definitely a core belief system that's manifesting, but I think it's actually closer to a control issue, because I know guys like Stefan, and I think, I consider myself type A, and my identity is very important to me. My independence is also very important to me. And I think that's what I'm hearing coming up for you, Stefan, because your identity is somebody who gets things done, who makes things happen. And you're right, that can be incompatible with maybe a beta partner. But also he also brought up the issue of his independence, not being able to sleep, having to consider somebody else's feelings. So if those two things are incompatible, you're going to look for any reason to get this girl out the door, to call her Uber or Lyft. And so I also think that it's a matter of, for very accomplished people, they need to control most situations, but you cannot control the variable of another human being. And I think it's not just that he's the perfect girl isn't out there. He needs her to have all of these things so that he can accept her, so that she can be matched with his life, so that she becomes worthy to invest a long time. Because like I said, I was surprised. The first thing you said was, I imagine a warm hug, but it's got to be the right hug.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that this control issue that you're talking about, we actually oftentimes have more control than we think about. I mean, I have the same problem as you, Stefan, around sleeping. I loathe the first few times someone sleeps in my bed, because for me, it's disruptive. And then I'm thrown off the entire next day and I've got busy stuff going on. And I just found out that a really good friend of mine who's 39 and I think have been married for over a decade, he just confided in me that he and his wife sleep in separate bedrooms and they have a vibrant sex life, but they sleep in separate bedrooms and they say it totally works for them. And the reason why I bring that up for you is because there's an opportunity to co-author some of these agreements, arrangements, if discussed. I know in the past, I just dealt with it. I slept shitty because I felt the expectation from my partner was, oh, she had to sleep here. And if she didn't, then her feelings would be hurt. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to deal with that, or I didn't want to, instigate that. But now it's having the conversation and just being listen, here's what happens, and it'd be really great if we could spend this intimate time together, but I need some sleep. Can we negotiate this?
Well, we can get used to sleeping. To me, Steph, and tell me if this sounds true, it feels like you have a very clear idea of what you want, but you're not actively looking for what you might need.
Interesting. That might be true, right? I have this desire to have, someone that can be a senator's wife or whatever, and can go and do fundraising and run the campaign. Mm-hmm. That might not be what I need, right? I can hire a campaign manager. I don't need my wife to do it. Because within this juxtaposition between these two different types, mm-hmm. the kind of nurturing and caring and sweet person versus the badass, in some ways they represent things that I'm missing, right? I feel like I haven't achieved enough, and therefore I want a partner that could achieve a bunch. Mm. So it eases my path to the kind of wealth I want, because my partner just bought more than half. So now we've doubled, and it's I doubled my net assets. It's awesome. Or I'm not getting that nice, juicy hug in other aspects of my life. So I think this person is going to walk in and just deliver it. These are the kinds of things you guys are making me think about right now.
Hmm. Oof. I love it. Well, this is more stuff for you to think about. I mean, because once you make a decision about this, what you're picking, what you're looking for, even the things that the characteristics that you're attracted to will change. If it really is about what makes you, and again, if you're not able to sleep, it means on a core evolutionary level that you don't feel safe. So you need to look for the qualities that will make you feel safe sleeping next to someone. And more importantly, if it's going to be long-term, happy waking up to that someone. And I think that should be the priority when you're looking for a potential partner.
And Stefan, since you were when you were waiting for us to start the recording, you were reading off the crossword puzzle. I imagine that maybe you're also a reader or you like reading.
I don't. You guys just asked me to do sound checks, and so it was the thing in front of me.
Okay. We're going to edit this part out. That has nothing to do with anything.
Well, I was going to ask you, so one of the things is, like, as you're talking about, if you're potentially interested in changing and starting to attract some of these women into your life, some of the books that have changed my life and my clients' lives, the number one book that affected my dating and love life that I read 10 years ago is called The Way of the Superior Man by David Deida. And it's a book about sexual mastery, women, your purpose and passion. And from a number of things that you just shared about not feeling like you've accomplished what you could accomplish, but also not attracting the woman that you want, that book lit me up 10 years ago, and I've probably recommended it to hundreds of men and women since then. So if you don't like to read, I would encourage maybe just even downloading it and listening to it. It can be kind of edgy and provocative, but that's good because it'll wake you up to thinking a little bit differently. So I would offer you that as one way of taking action that would be different than going on another date.
I will tell you that a friend of mine sent me that book, and it is sitting in my home unread. And
there
now
it
I
is.
Will read
to
it.
Be. Yes, meant sir. To be. Thank your friend. He gave you she gave you a gift.
So we have two homework assignments for you, Stefan. Read that book, and everybody read that book, and we'll have the details on the site. But also, do a journaling exercise. It's really clear that you're very clear on your identity again, but unclear about the kind of partner that would best benefit that identity and who you believe yourself to be in the world. So you really want to journal about you, Stefan, in the world. And then also journal about Stefan in relationship. What's that guy like? What does he need? How does he treat his partner? How does his partner treat him? And you might find that there's a discrepancy between those two. And then you'll be able to accept the fact that maybe the right partner for you isn't a type A. It isn't going to soothe your soul. Isn't going to provide that safety that you're clearly needed for thinking about anybody needs. You need safety in relationships. So I hope this is helpful for you to keep thinking about this.
This was super helpful. You guys are amazing. I'm really, really grateful that you're able to take the time. I'm super excited to start journaling and to read these things and to put some different things into practice.
Oh, fantastic. Go forth and be the change.
Stefan, you're awesome, man. Thank you for offering yourself up because you've done a service for yourself and other people who are
listening
to.
Many listeners can relate to this. I learned something, too.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Stefan. Y'all, thank you so much. Dominic, this was really fantastic. We did some real good work in real time.
We're pretty damn good, aren't we?
We're a very dynamic duo. So I want more people to be able to get helped by you. How can we find you?
Awesome. So I run a podcast with my good buddy, Brian Stacey. It's called the Man Amongst Men podcast. And it's a high-performing man's guide to personal development. And we talk about a lot of these things that most guys don't talk about. You know, their sexual behaviors, the forces that have shaped them. But also, you know, how to be more productive and powerful and connect to your purpose in life. So the Man Amongst Men podcast, we have doinnerwork.com where you can go to and get a bunch of downloads. We have, if you go to doinnerwork.com/books, there are three different lists of books that we recommend for men on that site. And that's one of the things we get asked most about is like, what books are you reading? Mm-hmm, and so there's a list on there that I think all you guys would like.
Great. And the book that you mentioned, his last name is Data?
Data. It's Deida, David Deida. And that book I've recommended quite a bit. And women and men both have gotten a lot out of. Women. When women read it, they're like, oh, this is the guy I'm looking for. Mm. Like, that's the guy I want. And then men who read it are like, oh, I could be that guy. And this is how I've not been that guy. Mm. And it gives you a really clear, like, it gives you a 2x4 over the back of the head.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Idiot.
Yeah. It's like, hey, shithead.
Because we've been tricked. It's not our fault. It's Disney. We've been tricked into wanting some fuck shit. And so I think we converted a former fuckboy today. Well done.
One less fuckboy on the streets.
You're welcome, ladies. Look out for the new and improved Stefan. So thank you so much for joining us, audience. Thank you again, Dominic. And what's your real Insta?
My real Insta is Dominic Q.
There you go. And it's Dominic with a K. As you know, I'm BEA, the change. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. This is the Be the Change podcast, recorded at Sonos Studios in New York City. Thanks for listening.